The Guardian.
Hello, this is Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. While Westminster takes its summer break across the Atlantic, the race for the White House is just getting going. This week, Republican candidate Mitt Romney is in London, and so is The Guardian's Washington reporter, Richard Adams. So what better time to take a proper look at how the campaign's shaping up? Joining Richard on the panel this week are two other seasoned Washington watchers, Guardian columnist and part-time Atlanticist Jonathan Friedland and New Yorker come Londoner Hadley Freeman. A warm welcome to all three of you. August is usually the month that the US election campaign gets serious. Polling numbers start to harden, funding is firming up, and running mates get vetted and party conventions addressed. But this year, the campaign's already in apocalyptic mode. It's not so much change you can believe in as a battle for the soul of America.
Over the next 4 months, you have a choice to make. Not just between two political parties, or even two people. It's a choice between two very different plans for our country.
People who've worked hard, started a business, and created jobs can't believe what President Obama's saying about them.
If you got a business, that you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Oh.
Unbelievable.
What an insult.
I'm outraged.
I can't believe he just said that.
Governor Romney's plan would cut taxes for the folks at the very top, roll back regulations on big banks. And he says that if we do, our economy will grow and everyone will benefit. But you know what? We tried that top-down approach. It's what caused the mess in the first place.
I can't believe the President of the United States could say that I have not made this.
The government had practically nothing to do with it. If anything, government gets in our way.
We've worked for everything we've gotten.
We risk everything every day.
I believe the only way to create an economy built to last is to strengthen the middle class. Asking the wealthy to pay a little more so we can pay down our debt in a balanced way. Sometimes politics can seem very small, but the choice you face, it couldn't be bigger.
Richard Adams, listening to that, the idea that businesses don't build themselves, the community does. Is Barack Obama tacking to the left, as Mitt Romney seems to be suggesting there?
No, not at all. It's part of a speech that Obama gave, which he an idea he borrowed from Elizabeth Warren, the incredibly popular liberal Democratic Senate candidate in Massachusetts, which was that, you know, we're all in this together, to coin a phrase, but that, you know, even businesses rely on other people. They rely on customers, they rely on the roads that the government builds, they rely on the services that government provides. And it's a bit like the idea of, you know, standing on the shoulders of giants and so forth. So it was actually, when you look at the whole speech that he gave, it was pretty anodyne stuff, really. I mean, it's hard to argue against. The Republicans have sort of, you know, cut it out with a knife and sort of said, no, this is what he meant.
They are devilish, aren't they, Jonathan? But you look at the polls, I've got one in front of me here, and about how polarised opinion is now. So Republicans splitting, registered Republicans splitting 9% against 91% in favour of Romney, and Democrats 88%, 9% in favour of Obama. I mean, there was a time when people used to say it's not quite clear what party labels meant in America, wasn't there, 30 years ago? Whereas,
yes, I mean, what's happened, I think, in terms of that particular point is that more and more people identify themselves as independent now, so that therefore the ones who do say, yeah, I want to be identified as a Republican, they're pretty reliable Republicans, and they're going to be telling pollsters they back Romney, and the same on the other side. So you've got that expanding pool of independents, and I think if you looked at a poll 40 years ago, there'd have been fewer independents, and so that's why you could have something like the phenomenon of Reagan Democrats in the 80s, people who change party affiliation. Now there's now the battle is for those people in between, and I think it's interesting what Richard was telling us. I mean, that it so often Obama gets in trouble for, or is called to account for, things that really do sound very anodyne. I mean, to the point where he infuriates his own liberal base because they think it's too anodyne, but you take it out of context. I mean, it sounds like he was saying it takes a village to raise a business, to adapt the Hillary Clinton book title. I mean, it's hardly that fire-breathing Bolshevism, but it gets him in trouble. And I think Jeb Bush even came out this week to remind people that the internet was originally a product of the Pentagon. For example, you know, it wasn't started up by some dot-com kids in a garage, or even Al Gore. who didn't claim it but was held to have claimed being the father of the internet. You know, it's sort of thing that particularly in this country or in social democratic Europe, to say that you need an infrastructure and roads and a higher education and even the Defense Department to develop new technology, utterly uncontentious. But it shows you still the context is very different in the United States.
Hadley, I was looking this week, obviously after the shooting in Aurora and the issue of gun control, they've all been ducking it like crazy, haven't they, all week? And yeah. I'd looked at the public opinion polls and it looks like in the last 10 years, it's moved. More people now are resistant to gun control than they were.
And actually, gun sales in Colorado went up this week after the shooting, as people feel the need to protect themselves. The White House actually issued a statement this morning saying that Barack Obama might consider addressing the issue of gun control during the campaign. But that was clearly just answering a reporter's question saying, will he consider this? And they have to go, well, maybe he will. That's certainly not a promise. The NRA just hold such fear over the political parties that neither party can address them at this point. And Jonathan and I were talking earlier. John Stewart showed a fantastic clip on The Daily Show, which is back in London now, in which a news program said that they're considering banning masks in the cinema. Anything but guns. They'll ban anything else but guns.
Oh, God. Richard, so gun lobby is still very much there. Huge sensitivity around government and a vitriolic anti-government contingent. But there's also something more interesting going on, isn't there? Post-Occupy in terms of people being willing to challenge money and challenge Mitt Romney's money in particular.
Yes, although I'm not sure I'd say this is necessarily a growth out of the Occupy movement. I'd say this is a device by the Obama campaign trying to latch on to the fact that Mitt Romney is incredibly wealthy and to make as much of that as they can. Americans generally tend to celebrate success and wealth, but Romney has a different level of success and wealth. So the question is, can they use it to paint him as being out of touch?
But is that telling? Is that something about the times we're in that people are suspicious of someone who's made money out of a kind of shady business where no one quite knows exactly what it does? Whereas in the past, it would have been a success story. You work your way up, and
well, yes. Except the trouble with Mitt Romney is it wasn't like he's Bill Gates. He didn't just start a company selling something which everybody wanted to buy, and that made him lots of money. He had a particular business, and business involved oftentimes taking over other businesses, stripping them down, shipping them all around the place, sometimes overseas, sometimes closing down, and that plays into a particular dialogue at the moment about jobs and outsourcing and, you know, manufacturing in China.
I think this is really important because we have a sort of notion of what the American dream is that is not as nuanced as it should be, because it's quite true that we can from this distance think Americans just revere and love wealth and wealthy people. But Romney violates one aspect of the American dream in a way, because the point about the American dream is the self-made person like the Bill Gates or Steve Jobs or someone like that. It actually cuts against that to know that his father was a politician, ran for president himself in the 60s, George Romney. The silver spoon idea actually it undermines the mobility that's inherent in the American dream. So the idea that Romney is a kind of little rich boy, Richie Rich in the comic book iconography, offends Americans even away even more than it would here. So, for example, I always remember the 1994 campaign when George W. Bush ran for governor in Texas. The only traction his opponent got was when she said that he was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. Suddenly, that they don't like. They have no problem with people being wealthy, but the idea they got it just through inheritance, and Romney absolutely embodies that kind of character. He looks like that, talks like that, is like that. I think allows a way in for a kind of class warfare which does live in America, even if it's different from the kind. I mean, people wouldn't like that here, but I think we often fail to see that because we just think America has a different attitude to wealth.
And also, I mean, this is not the first election where it's happened. I mean, it basically turned around for the Republicans and Democrats because John Kerry had this problem in 2004,
right,
who is wealthier than Romney. I mean, he is hugely wealthy, mainly because of his wife, who's part of the Heinz dynasty. So in a way, it's kind of swapped around, whereas before we had pictures of John Kerry windsurfing,
yes,
which was seen as hugely damaging, and now we have the Romneys on their jet ski and coming to watch their horse and dressage in the Olympics, which could not look wealthier if they tried. So it's not like this is a new thing or it's a specifically Republican thing.
No, class war has a part in American politics. And then the other element is the thing that Richard was talking about, which is newer, is analysing where did the money come from. And if it was gained through these rapacious, unprincipled outsourcing is particularly always has been actually very strong as an issue, but extra strong in a time of economic hardship. You put those two together, that he's privileged, he lives this very elite New England life, a la John Kerry, you know, with the dressage horse, which is a fantastic TV ad. People should YouTube it right away, coupled with this unprincipled way of building up wealth. And let's face it, it wasn't the Democrats who put that on the map. It was that very long ad, infomercial style ad in the Gingrich campaign, which kind of legitimized it, because he was being criticized on the right with a kind of left populist attack, you know, the day Romney came to town, which was filmed in the style of those old 1970s World in Action documentaries where, you know, wheezing pensioners on with emphysema said, you know, Mitt Romney came in and made me ill, basically, and my husband's out of work.
Well, actually, it was Ted Kennedy, of course, in 1994, who pioneered, who beat Romney when he ran for the Massachusetts Senate seat. Ted Kennedy used precisely those techniques as well. Gingrich then revived much of the same arguments, and now the Democratic Party nationally are using some of them as well, but with interspersed with pictures of a dancing horse and dressage with a top hat. There's this great ad of the dancing horse, and then cut in with clips of Mitt Romney trying to explain why he's not going to release his tax returns.
It's particularly striking here watching this, because the Labour have still not been able to articulate and find a way of using the poshness of David Cameron, the Bullingdon set, George Osborne.
Although his police horse did come near, didn't it? Rebecca Brooks'
police horse and the country suppers. People, they've got close to it, but not quite. And it's quite refreshing and in a way striking, because it's unexpected, seeing how fluent and easily this rhetoric and language comes to the American left in the form of the Democrats, when Labour still doesn't quite know how to say it about Cameron.
I mean, the other problem is that Romney's handled this issue so badly, the way he's not releasing his tax returns. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what kind of political sort of capital equations he does in his head that he thinks it's less damaging for him not to release them. I mean, you can only imagine what must be in these tax returns that he thinks would be more damaging if he did. And the irony is that his father pioneered that. His father was the one who first started releasing his tax documents to the public when he was running. So it's kind of come back and bitten the sun.
He was badgered into it by He had an interview with a journalist from Look magazine. He said, "Why don't you release your tax returns?" And he said, "Well, I don't think that's really relevant." And then rang the journalist back afterwards and said, "Oh, here's 22 years worth of my tax returns. I think I should show you the whole lot, because a couple of years wouldn't give you a fair picture." And that's his dad. Now, Mitt has released 1 year, 2010, says he might release 2011, but no more, and that's it. Question is, what's there? We know he's incredibly rich, so, I mean, it can't be that.
No, you know, money in countries that are seen as enemies to the US.
We know he's had a Swiss bank account, so that it can't be that.
Mm. The Swiss bank account is amazingly damaging. Just on a patriotism.
Yeah, and that actually really the Caymans. There may be more of that. There may be more money shifting around between various places. There's one theory that in 2009 he paid zero tax.
that would be problematic.
Because the stock market losses in 2008, he offset those against tax in 2009, so he pays zero tax.
Now, we should bear in mind this. There will be a chunk of the electorate that will see that and think, good for him. If I could get away with that, I would do that too. I mean, there's no comparison at all, but, you know, that argument will surprise people. But, you know, in the same way that after the Aurora tragic shootings, there were some people who thought, right, the right response to that, as Hadley was saying, is get a gun, because the shooter wouldn't have been able to kill people if we'd all been armed. You know, there are perverse reactions to these sort of things. It may seem obvious around this Guardian table how people should react to those things, but the American electorate never ceases to amaze and surprise, and there will be a chunk of opinion that thinks that's fine.
And what's quite funny is Romney's reaction to this is the same as what Jimmy Carr's was originally, which is he said, "I pay what I legally have to."
That's exactly what Romney said.
Exactly, yes. And with here, that was, you know, huge uproar when Jimmy Carr said that, and suddenly this comedian was on the front page. With Mitt Romney, that actually went sort of by the by. It's the fact that he's holding his tax returns that's more problematic.
So there will be a chunk of opinion, in fact, maybe even a majority, who think if he can get away with it, then he pays what he has to.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much of the Republican base now that it won't be thinking that at all. I mean, obviously there's the wealthy side, the Kochs and all those kinds of people. I don't really believe that they support Romney that much anyway, but that's a whole different issue.
Let's come on to how many, like, you know, he had a turbulent and awful race, frankly, didn't he, to get to the nomination?
Not really. I mean,
you don't think?
No.
You mentioned the new Gingrich adverts that are now sticking. And
yeah, I mean, you know, he had some mudthrown against. I mean, he ran a not great campaign. He had no particularly strong opposition. I mean, there were a lot of the only serious opponent he had was Rick Perry, and he dealt with him pretty well, and Rick Perry spent most of the time shooting himself in the foot. You know, Santorum and Gingrich were pygmies, and the fact that they even, you know, ran him close, well, and they didn't run him close, the fact that they even, you know, caused him any problems at all is a sign that Mitt Romney was never a great candidate. But Romney's problem was always going to be getting through the primaries, because so many of his previous positions were antithetical to the modern Republican Party on abortion and gun control and gay rights. You know, there's clips of him in 1994 sitting next to Ted Kennedy saying that Ted Kennedy hadn't done enough for gay rights as senator, and that Mitt Romney was going to do more. And which, we're not laughing about gay rights, obviously, we're just laughing at the thought that, you know, the guy who's
Romney attacking Kennedy from the left.
Yeah, from the left, you know.
But how's it going to work? I mean, can the Obama administration campaign have some fun with those things in the coming months?
Well, you see, can't, because those are things that hurt him in the Republican primary, they're not necessarily the national primary. What it did do, the one thing, because the Romney campaign are a bit paranoid and they wanted to make sure they won, they spent a vast amount of money in beating Gingrich, exactly. Guys that he was probably going to beat anyway. They spent $30 million in Florida, which Romney won running away. You know, this is money that they can't spend now. I mean, this is the reason why the Obama campaign is up with a lot of ads now in the US, and the Romney campaign can't respond, because they spent it all on beating Rick Santorum.
And it's not just the money, is it, though? Because some of the positions he adopted in order to leave no space on his right to show that he was as right-wing and culturally conservative as they are hostages to fortune in the November election.
Immigration,
so,
particularly.
You know, there was this brief flare-up, and I think, Hadley, you wrote about contraception, and this very eloquent, powerful student who came before a congressional committee and raised the issue. So and raised this issue of contraception. You thought the Republican Party is surely not going to go there, and Santorum said, "Yeah, maybe we should ban it," or more, was that effect? And Romney moved to close down that to say, "Okay, you know, I'm as right wing as you are on that." And those are positions. I think it defined him a bit in terms of the national electorate as somebody who is a cultural conservative. Whereas actually, if he'd stuck more to that position, the Romney of 1994, that might have been quite an appealing candidate.
But that's the irony.
Nationally.
Well, that's the irony of the Republican Party today. In order to be liked by the Republican Party, you have to become inelectable to the rest of the country. So that's the problem that the Republican Party has to dig itself out of somehow.
But isn't there something separate from policy positions and bits of the electorate like this and like that? There's the kind of character thing, isn't there? I mean, Ronald Reagan could win and win very big despite being an extremist and seen as an extremist by many people before.
But he wasn't. I mean, now he'd be completely inelectable. He'd be inelectable in today's Republican
Party.
Yeah,
but the electorate might have moved on, but at that time he was seen as quite extreme. George Bush also was extreme on some subjects, and yet he came through because people kind of thought they knew where they stood with him. Isn't the vulnerability for Romney that people think he's flipped and flopped around, which is what it was for Kerry, wasn't it? The Republican convention a couple of times ago, they're all waving great big flip-flops, weren't they, Hadley?
I think the real problem for both of them is that for a large part of the electorate this time, people aren't voting for anyone, they're voting against the other person. So it almost doesn't even really matter for a lot of the Republicans what Romney's like. They just hate Obama so much, and they're just voting against Obama.
I hear that from Republicans all the time. They're not really sold on Romney, and privately they will tell you that, you know, they really don't like him and they don't trust him.
And you think they'll all go out and vote for them just on these negative grounds, though?
Yeah. They'll vote for anybody. They'll vote for a cat
and a And I think
stick,
you mentioned earlier, Richard, that there's a chunk of them who wouldn't like to vote for a Mormon. Do you think, will that be a problem?
Well, we don't know about that. I mean, it's an interesting issue. There's polling that says there are people who say that, you know, they would never vote for a Mormon. I mean, whether that actually happens, I'm not sure. It's one of those things in a poll that if you ask that question, you'll get a response that might not actually occur in real life. I think when a lot of those people get into the ballot box, they'll stop worrying about whether or not he's a Mormon and just vote for the Republican.
I think you know, tempting the, I'm enjoying the absolute momentum of this conversation, which is tilting very much towards Obama and very negatively for Romney.
Let's have the case for all his flaws.
Mm. I'm not going to make a case for him. I'm going to make a case that this is a real race, and it's absolutely plausible that he could win this. Mm. I still don't think he will. I think Obama will, but it's a proper contest, even though from afar Romney can look an almost hapless and sort of comedy character candidate. And that is because, you know, Richard knows and will tell us, I'm sure, about the economy. These elections are settled partly on the economy, and the economy isn't great. People used to say about the unemployment rate, it did need to be 8 or below, really, or middle 8s for percentage points. For Obama to feel home and dry, and it's not quite safe there. And there was a period where it seemed to be lifting, and now seems to be stalling a bit, the recovery, and that is important. Romney, yes, can say I'm a CEO and I know how to run a business, but he doesn't even need to say that. I mean, he just needs to say this method, this guy, is not working and not succeeding. And if people do feel that, there will be a problem for Obama. I mean, I still think his strengths outweigh even that, and I think he's a better candidate. And I think the debates he'll absolutely triumph over Romney. And I think the likability of Romney and the lack of will affect itself even among Republican voters who won't feel that degree of motivation to come out. So I think in the end it stacks up for Obama, but I think we shouldn't be complacent. There is a proper race going on here. Richard will tell us about the economy.
Well, I mean, you know, this election is all about the economy, and what we're seeing is every time Obama or the Democrats, you know, make some sort of telling blow against Romney, or Romney does something silly, then we get the next set of jobs figures, and then we're all back to where we were, and it's all about these jobs figures. America doesn't have the sort of social safety net that Europeans have. Americans are much more likely to vote for someone who's going to promise them jobs.
And do you think, Hadley, you know, you'll remember the change we can believe in and all of that. The problem for Obama is if there is no social safety net, there's nothing else apart from a job for anyone who hasn't got hope. If there aren't enough jobs, isn't he looking as flawed in character terms then as Romney?
Yeah, it's the, you know, yes, we can, but, as he infamously said on the Daily Show, it is a problem. I mean, employment, I think, has now been 8.2. Unemployment's been 8.2% for 2 months in a row. But the likability thing is an issue. I mean, Romney's likability figures were something like 27% in April. And no candidate with such low likability at this point in the race has ever gotten through. What Obama can offer, I mean, you know, there's only so long he can keep blaming the previous guy, no matter how fair that is the reason. But what he, I think this is why this campaign is just going to be so negative. What he can do is just keep attacking Romney. And Romney just keeps attacking back because it looks increasingly like he doesn't have any policies or ideas of his own. So it just becomes these very personal attacks against each other.
Oh dear. And can we just take a step back and say, should we mind as much, you know, interested in this and all have our own biases? Maybe we'll have the same bias. But does it make all that much difference, Richard? I mean, if Congress stays as it is, is anything going to happen in the government of America in the next 4 years, or is it just going to be more grudging compromises and threats to turn the lights off and no legislation being passed?
Well, the really interesting story about this election is who controls the Senate, and there's a very good possibility the Republicans will control the Senate. Even if Obama wins. I mean, you know, there's three likely outcomes, which is Obama wins, keeps control. Democrats keep control of the Senate. Romney wins. Republicans take control of the Senate, and Obama wins, and you know, and the Republicans take control of the Senate. Now, of those three outcomes, I mean, it's really hard to see any of them as being optimistic. The most entertaining will be President Romney with the Tea Party running the Senate. And that will be funny. Tea Party owes nothing to Romney.
It's a very particular definition of entertaining.
It's saying from a journalistic point of view. You know, because then you'll see them trying to institute the sort of austerity packages that have been so popular in the United Kingdom. And you know, Romney will spend all his time, you know, fending them off. And it'll be harder for him than it would be for Obama.
I mean, Johnny, do you think, I mean, what would we expect from, what can we expect from, first of all, a President Romney in the first 100 days or whatever? And secondly, from Obama, would he get anything done?
I mean, this is a head versus heart question. The head says that there is a whole record that second term presidents don't do very much, and all of their big legislative records are racked up in their first term. And there's quite a sort of stubborn set of historical precedents for that. nevertheless, you know, there is this kind of fantasy hope that Obama, who did promise so much, will really be able to do much more when he doesn't have re-election to worry about. It is a bit of a fantasy because that has not, I don't think, been the main impediment on him. I think it has been the constraints of lacking a congressional majority since 2010 and or a supermajority in the Senate. And so that's that has held him back. So it's hard to believe he would do much different. Nevertheless, I think, you know, there's still people from outside who want to know who to support in this race. I think you kind of still would like him there to restrain that kind of Tea Party element that Richard's talking about. What Romney would do, I suppose he's sort of he's promised a few things, and I think it would be a return to that Bush first term sort of approach of tax cuts for the wealthiest and stimulate the economy that way, even though it's failed several times around the world, trickle-down economics. I think that's what Romney would want to do.
Richard, we've got this big issue with the fiscal cliff, haven't we, that's coming up immediately after the... Yeah. Probably haven't got time to go into too much detail, but like, does it matter who wins the presidential election for that, or will it be sorted out by the outgoing Obama in any event?
Well, some of it might have to be dealt with in the lame duck session between the election and the inauguration, because the 1st of January is when the Bush tax cuts expire.
And so then everyone suddenly gets poorer, even though the economy's not recovered yet.
Yeah, and then there's the deal on the fiscal side, on the budget side as well, to come alongside that, and then probably the debt ceiling as well. I mean, it's easier if it's President Romney with a Republican Senate, because they'll just cut everything, cut taxes, cut budgets, and that's what they'll do. I mean, that's what will happen.
So in that sense, that does matter. But Hadley, I mean, even if you get the return of Obama that you might want to see, what does it tell you about the kind of condition of American politics that no one seems to be expecting it? No, it's going to do an awful lot.
No, it certainly says a lot about the state of the Republican Party now, which, you know, for a while looked so mighty and now can't elect anybody. And said it's a president who has disappointed his base, Obama. You know, there are a lot of, you know, support, like my friends of my friends in New York, who just absolutely worshipped Obama, you know, and worked for his campaign and are very disappointed. And in a lot of cases, the husbands of my friends or my, you know, friends' mothers and stuff are looking at Romney at this point. So it is...
That's interesting. Why the husbands?
It's always the men. It's the Obama captures the hearts of women. Some terrible generalization.
And they stay loyal.
Yeah, very loyal.
Obama's way ahead.
Yeah, you don't say anything bad about Obama in front of my mother. But
the men are Romney curious.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I find that like, particularly. I mean, just looking at my family, which is just a very tiny personal example. Like my father voted for Reagan and the first Bush, and then switched over to the Democrats for Clinton, and has stayed. And he stayed loyal to Obama, but I could imagine him he would never vote for Romney, but sort of other men of his age, sort of looking back now. I mean, I think that was quite a big switch at that point. But in terms of Romney's foreign tour that he's on now, I think that's quite interesting. I mean, certainly his trip to Israel, I think, is very interesting, and how he's so much, you know, trying to sort of pally up with Netanyahu, and whereas there's, you know, famously no real great fondness between Netanyahu and Obama. I think in terms of a Romney presidency, that's a fascinating idea, and you know, him supporting the settlements and that sort of thing, that's a huge difference in terms of what
do you want to find a word
done.
On that, Johnny?
I think it's quite true that what the Republican, this has been a big shift until 5 or 6 years ago, maybe until the second Bush, it was a consensus, more or less. There was a United States consensus on Israel and Palestine, and people who didn't try and seek partisan advantage in it. And the Republicans have seen an opportunity there that Obama, I think unfairly, is seen as a chilly friend of Israel, is seen as being a sort of, the relationship is a cold one, and they see an opportunity there. I don't think it's in terms of votes particularly. The Jewish vote in America, remarkably, this always shocks people, this figure went 78% for Obama.
But there's Christians who care a lot about this, aren't there?
There are Christian evangelicals who care passionately, religiously about Israel, believing it's involved in prophecy and revelation, bringing on the second coming, etc. And they think, don't mess with Israel. And Romney is partly with an eye to that. So, but playing politics with that, I think, is awful. And in a way, we only haven't felt the awfulness of it because everything is sort of on ice with the Israel-Palestine conflict during the Arab Spring anyway. There's no progress anyway. But if there were, and if there were a chance for it, the idea of politicians playing politics with it, you know, we know here that during the progress on Northern Ireland, for example, Labour and Conservative didn't play politics on it. And you need that if you're ever going to advance a peace process.
Final word from Richard.
Sorry, one last point. The Democrats are desperate for Romney's horse to win the dressage because they wanted to win a gold medal and they want to really for it to be a big issue and everybody know about it. It's quite funny. Maybe silver would be better. But they really want it to happen. It's quite funny.
Well, that's all for this week. You can follow the US election campaign in gory detail right through to November at guardian.co.uk/USA. My thanks to Hadley, to Jonathan and to Richard. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Tom Clark and I approve this podcast. Thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.